Hello and welcome to People in Profit. I'm Charles Belgrand. Today we talk about the road not taken, or at least the one not taken by most people when it comes to tourism. An idea that came up this month as we saw North Korea's dictator Kim Jong-un trying to claim his country's stake in the multi-billion dollar global tourism industry by opening a brand new beach resort on its east coast that can accommodate as many as 20,000 people. As of right now, though, not many foreign tourists will be able to take advantage of the new facilities. Only Russians will be able to dip their feet in what North Koreans call the East Sea. For the rest of the world, well, the country has mostly been closed to visitors since the start of the pandemic in 2020. Well, to help us better understand North Korea's approach to tourism and to help us better understand the business of organizing tours in parts of the world most people would shy away from, let's speak to Simon Cockrell. He's the general manager of Koryo Tours, a company that since 1993 has helped bring international visitors to one of the most closed-off countries on Earth, and a person with rare insights on life in North Korea. Simon Cockrell, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Charles.
I'd like to start by talking about that beach resort, obviously. What do you think is Pyongyang's objective in building this?
It's possible that it's changed over time, because when ground was broken on this several years ago, the relationship with South Korea was at its peak. Basically, things were going very well. There was a visit by the South Korean president to North Korea. There was a commitment to make a shared Olympic bid. And these kind of halcyon days are long gone now, with unification abandoned officially by the North Koreans, South Korea declared an enemy state, and so on. So quite frankly, there's been a lot of speculation about it, and the capacity of the resort makes it obvious to anybody with any basic mathematical skills that it's not for Western tourists. It's not for Chinese tourists either. I think it's probably ground broken initially thinking that it would attract South Korean tourists and, of course, domestic tourists. Those would be the two largest populations and people with the most interest in going there.
Do you get a sense of how big demand for domestic tourism is in North Korea?
It's growing, because the kind of middle class, let's say, and I use that term carefully, it's a kind of proto-middle class, what would be middle class, all things being equal, has grown quite a lot there. But the system works there not in the same way as everywhere else, of course. So the market for people thinking, let's go on a break with the family, is small. It's more group life. North Korean life is group life. So incentive trips, overperforming factory units, groups of farmers who've yielded more than the next group of farmers, that kind of thing, is quite often how trips around Pyongyang and other parts of the country have operated. So maybe something like that. I mean, there aren't people there who drive around themselves and go on family trips, and the capacity of the area would suggest it would be done on a large scale. Tens of thousands of people could stay there at one time, after all. So they would have to be transported there in buses rather than everyone showing up in their private car, which they don't have. So it remains to be seen, quite frankly, but whether they will be open about it or not also remains to be seen.
So this is Koryo Tours caters to international visitors trying to visit North Korea. It's been virtually impossible to visit the country since the pandemic. What's the status right now?
So still closed. So they closed the door thoroughly in January of 2020, and tourism has only resumed briefly in February of this year to the Rasan Free Trade Zone in the far north of the country, in February for 3 weeks, and then closed again. In April, we were able to take around 200 people to the Pyongyang Marathon to participate in that. But they were not officially tourists. They were amateur athletes, which is basically tourists who are willing to run a 5 kilometer, 10, half, or full marathon. So a little bit of a dodge there. There is no tourism apart from for Russian passport holders, and that's not something that we get involved in. So we're basically waiting for things to open up and things to resume, and fielding the same kind of questions day in, day out. Basically, when will it happen? Why is it not happened yet? That kind of thing. We wait.
And how do you adapt as a business if your main reason for existence isn't possible? How do you adapt to keep the company afloat?
I mean, we stay busy in other ways. The company became a lot smaller. We shrunk, it wasn't quite down to one meal a day and moving the light bulb from room to room, that kind of thing. But yeah, we had to become a lot smaller. And because it's not like we were informed, we're closing to tourists for 5 years, for 6 years. It just closes and then you don't know what's going to happen. So we already ran tours to some other places in the world, to Turkmenistan for 20 years now, parts of Central Asia. We used to go to remote parts of Russia before the recent conflict, Mongolia and so on. But we've diversified a little bit, but fundamentally we are known for and we specialize in North Korea. And we're rightly known for this in a complicated field. We are the market leader for a very good reason. And so we're waiting for our main destination to reopen.
Well, you mentioned your diversification to other destinations. And one of the countries that Korea Tour now offers people to visit is Afghanistan. It's been under Taliban rule since 2021, completely isolated on the diplomatic stage. And yet, international visitors have been slowly trickling in to see the place for themselves, as you'll see in this report.
Among the crowd of Afghan men watching a wrestling match, two female tourists sit in headscarves, curious about the local sport. They are among a handful of tourists who are venturing into Afghanistan, arriving solo or in groups, by plane, on motorbike, or camper van. The country's Taliban government is still not officially recognized by any other nation, mostly because of its discrimination against women. And despite that isolation, it is starting to emerge as an unlikely destination for the boldest of adventurers.
Out of curiosity, how much is this?
This one.
Yeah, just like...
Okay. I had some like ethical concerns about it initially, but I talked to people who had been here recently and realized that, you know, it was better to see for myself.
Almost 4 years after seizing power, Afghanistan's Taliban are rolling out the red carpet for tourists, hoping the multi-billion-dollar industry could be a vital economic lifeline for a country which struggles to attract investment.
When a tourist comes here, he rents a car, needs an interpreter, eats at a hotel, and that will certainly create a lot of money and play a strong role in our economy.
Countries like the UK, US, and Canada still advise against travel to Afghanistan due to security concerns, following a gunman attack in May 2024, which killed three Spanish tourists. Critics also question the ethics of visiting a country whose government discriminates against half its population. Whilst harsh restrictions are enforced on Afghan women, like covering up in public or no entry into public parks and gyms, the rules appear to be more relaxed for foreign women, who can enjoy freedom of movement and only wear a headscarf. With tourist visas made easy to obtain and flights operating from hubs like Dubai and Istanbul, some 9,000 foreign tourists visited Afghanistan last year, and 3,000 in the first 3 months of 2025 alone.
Simon, what's the demand like for the tours that Koryo organizes in Afghanistan?
It's been very strong, actually. So we've been operating these tours. They've actually been going ahead for a few months now. Tours for mixed groups and then special tours for women only, also using female tour guides there, which is very unusual. But the interest has been high and the demand has been high. Essentially, that's been going rather well.
Well, the wider question here has to do with the ethics of traveling to places like the North Korea or Afghanistan. How do you grapple with that question? Is it that the benefits of people-to-people exchange and real-life encounters with people who don't often see international visitors outweigh the likelihood that the money spent ends up supporting a regime that people are ideologically opposed to? How do you grapple with it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessary when you're considering somewhere to go on a trip that you have to be ideologically supportive of them. I don't think that many people make that argument. Let's say specifically in the case of North Korea, the idea that tourism dollars are somehow propping up the economy there, I mean, that has to have been laid to rest by now. It's never been true, and it's proven to have not been true over the last few years as their economy has somehow improved, despite the complete lack of tourists going there. We always feel that certain countries, North Korea being the best example, are too isolated. And they're isolated in many ways because of their own policies. But they're too isolated. The people there have no voice. They have no agency. They're not granted any agency. And this is not how it should be. We think that the cure for isolation, or the treatment, at least if not the cure, is not more isolation. And it's very easy to for people to sit back and criticize, saying you should, you shouldn't. But the fact is that a lot of what you know and a lot of what your viewers know about somewhere like North Korea has come from people who have been there, and people who know that their experience on the ground is limited. They know that it's not the totality of experience that they can have in the country, but they've gone there anyway, learned what they can, experienced what they can, and it's created a deeper and growing interest within them. And I can say anecdotally, of course, that I have met literally thousands, if not more, North Koreans whose lives have been altered by interaction with foreigners. And I don't mean they've changed completely. I just mean that what they think of us, or what they're taught to think of us by state media, by propaganda, and the education system, also propaganda, is super negative, so much more negative than what we think of them. And if you interact with any North Koreans, even in a very simple way, kick a football, say hi, share a drink at a picnic, that kind of thing, then of course these things happen. Easy to believe that they don't, or they're fake. All nonsense, of course. Then this can plant the seed in people's minds that, oh, hey, what we're told is not always true. Or there are times when, you know, it's not completely accurate at all times. And I think that this is of immeasurable value. I do think that it's a legitimate concern for people that they don't want to be the actor who props up a system they disagree with. But that is not what happens when they travel to such places.
Simon Cockrell, you're a general manager at Koryo Tours. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on France 24. Well, that's it for this episode of People and Profit. You can always watch all of our previous episodes on the France 24 app or on the podcast platform of your choice. In the meantime, thank you for watching, and good luck finding your next holiday destination.